हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे,
हरे
राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। सब We saw last Friday the first chapter, which we discussed, and you have seen the flow of events in the first chapter. Basically, we are trying to understand the personalities who are present in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. You have seen each one of them had a different situation. For example, when you look at the important personalities like Dhritarashtra, Dhritarashtra's problem. What was Dhritarashtra's problem? Dhritarashtra's problem was this, that in spite of having the best association, in spite of getting the best help from the Shastra, in spite of experiencing all the distress in this world, in spite of that, Dhritarashtra does not want to learn anything in life. This was Dhritarashtra's situation. In spite of the best association, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself, coming in and talking to him. In spite of all the best Shastrams were spoken to him by Vidura, Sanal Kumara Maharshi, Dhaumya and Vedavyas. In spite of all the distress what was waiting at the doorstep, which was known to Dhritarashtra before, still that mind won't change. If we get to that situation, then nothing can be done. That is important point to remember. That if we take this attitude in life, spiritual life particularly, that decision we have to make within ourselves. We don't have to think about others. In this particular issue, it is our decision that is more important than anybody else telling us anything about it. That Shastram is right, Krishna is right, and whatever they have told us, to take it seriously in life, that is from our side it has to come. And this is specifically the reason why it is said that Udhareda Atmana Atmanam, that verse in the Bhagavad Gita. If you remember, Udhareda Atmana Atmanam Atmanam Avasadayam Atmanyam Atmano Bhandu Atmaiva Ripura Atmana. Krishna says that is where this verse kicks in very correctly. Because if we make a decision not to do anything about it, and we become very stubborn in our nature, like that, full of tamogunam inside, and don't want to accept the knowledge what Krishna has given us, and we become so negative in our approach to Krishna consciousness, then Krishna says, there's nothing I can do about it. Udhareda Atmana Atmanam. Therefore, Krishna says, one should elevate oneself. Krishna is not saying that everything you have to do, but this particular resolve inside, that I want to escape from this material existence once for all. I want to get back to the spiritual world, to my real identity as spirit soul. I want to get back to that situation. If I don't make that decision within myself, then nothing else is going to happen. This is the very first important step. This is the lesson from Dhritarashtra to learn. Udhareda Atmana Atmanam. That is an important situation in one's life. When one keep on listening and hearing, and Bhagavad Gita becomes simply an entertainment, that's no use. Bhagavad Gita is knowledge. Knowledge for moving in the right direction in life. And if it's not taken advantage of, then that opportunity is lost. Udhareidalpana alpanam magnam samsara varidhau. In another place it says like that. Yoga arudastham asadhyam samyak darshana nishtaya. That yoga arudastham asadhyam samyak darshana nishtaya. That one should set up oneself ready for it to receive the knowledge. And Dhritarashtra was not willing to do that. This is where the difference between Dhritarashtra and Arjuna. So Dhritarashtra had his problem. Then we saw Yudhishthira Maharaj, his problem. What was his problem? Too much sticking to dharmam. In the name of dharmam, he was not willing to make any compromise. Knowledge was not coming in. Simply hanging on to the dharmam. And that was eventually, because he was dharmishta, he was following dharmam, Krishna helped him at the end. Krishna took the opportunity to go to him and to speak to him through Bhishma, the spiritual understanding of life, that which is more important than dharma. So at least Yudhishthira Maharaj had that consciousness of dharmam that helped him to get their help from Krishna through Bhishma. While Bhishma was eventually speaking to Yudhishthira Maharaj about Dharma, at the very end of his leaving the body, all the Pandavas were present there, the sages were present there, Kundidevi was there, and Krishna was there. And Krishna prompted Bhishma to speak about Dharma to Yudhishthira Maharaj. If you remember in the Bhagavatam, you will see that in the first canto. So while Bhishma was speaking about that, Draupadi laughed, seeing his speech on Dharma. Draupadi asked a question. Where was all this dharmic consciousness when I was insulted in the assembly of the Kauravas and the Pandavas? And where did this where was your the high principles, what you are talking now to Yudhishthira? What happened then? This was not present, and Draupadi laughed at Bhishma. When Draupadi laughed, Bhishma spoke to her. Bhishma told her that the mistake I have made was this. What is known in Shastram as Ashraya Dosham. Ashraya Dosham has happened to both, to Bhishma and Drona. What was that? If you take the shelter of people who are evil in their mind, who have no Krishna consciousness, and eat their food, then that will infect your blood and your thinking as well. And it will infect your blood and thinking as well. And that was the point Bhishma was making. Bhishma was saying that I was eating polluted food given to me by the Kauravas, by Duryodhana and his associates. And because of eating that, I have lost my intelligence to think in the right direction. Bhishma admits that. And because now that I have been hit by arrows from Arjuna, the blood has been purified. So I feel purified by this war. Actually, my inside is more purified than my outside, he says. And then Bhishma took the opportunity to speak to Yudhishthira. And that is how Vyasadhyay Ishware Rajyay Krishnair Albhudakarma Krishna. Krishna has organized all these things in this particular way so that everybody involved gets affected by that. So Veda Vyasa Maharshi was there and Bhishma Pitamaha spoke about it to Yudhishthira at that point. So Bhishma was like that. Drona was like that. And then we have seen Yudhishthira Maharaj, and then we have seen also Dharma Dhritarashtra. Different nature. Then eventually Krishna brought us also to talk about Arjuna. The quality with Arjuna was that Arjuna was a straightforward person. He hasn't got that crookedness inside. He was straight. So he was willing to accept. And that shift happens in Arjuna's life gradually. How from a friend, how he thought about Krishna as a friend, how he was able to accept him as a spiritual master and willing to take instructions from Krishna. That shows that how good-hearted Arjuna was, in spite of the fact that he spoke a lot of things which didn't make much sense from this point of view of the Shastra. But still, because he was a person with good consciousness, that he had this nature in him, that he was willing to change and willing to take instructions from a higher authority. So that is how we started this second chapter. So second chapter began with this, that we mentioned that the first verse itself, that if you look at the first verse, Tamtada, Sanjaya was saying, Tamtada Krabaya Vishtam, Ashrapurna Kuleshana, Vishidanda Idam Vakim, Uvacha Madhusudana. Saying like that, Krishna spoke about this. And by now, Arjuna has fallen into depression. And he is experiencing that distress inside. And it is to come to the Vishadam state, which if it goes further, it can turn into madness. So, when two people are talking, you can see Krishna was not speaking anything. Krishna was just listening. Krishna has not spoken till now. Till now, Krishna has not spoken. Because Krishna knows what goes on from the other side is all madness. So, if you allow him to speak, as long as he wants to speak, it is better to listen at that point. That was Krishna's position. that Arjuna's situation was Vishadasthiti. What was his consciousness saying? Oh, these are all my relatives, and I have to kill them, and I will be responsible for that, for their death. This was Arjuna's situation. Then Arjuna's situation was that to Arjuna, Krishna could have spoken something. Just to console Arjuna, Krishna could have spoken like this. How? Krishna could have said, Arjuna, don't worry. Don't fight the war. Go home and sit peacefully there at home. Why worry about all this? Or if you are so much fed up with this life, take sannyas. Why worry? He could have said that to Arjuna. Krishna could have said that to Arjuna. Because Arjuna has taken sannyas before, and if he has to take sannyas again, it's no problem. And it has become the nature now. If you can't get people to take sannyas, what you do? Whoever comes, give them sannyas. That's the easier solution, isn't it? So he could have done that with Arjuna. Krishna could have done that with Arjuna. Arjuna, you take sannyas and go away from here like you did before. And problems is solved, isn't it? There's no problem. I understand your good heart. I understand your way of thinking. And I fully appreciate what you are saying. All you have told me, I thought makes sense to everybody, isn't it? Krishna could have said that to Arjuna. And they could have left the place without causing any embarrassment to anyone. And Arjuna would have felt happy, wouldn't he? He would have felt happy. Oh, I did everything because I was such a good person. And I made the right decision, Arjuna would have felt. All these things were happening at this place in Kurukshetra at that time. So, when this happened, what did Krishna do? Instead of doing any of these things, what Krishna did was, he smacked Arjuna on both the cheeks, one on each side. He gave two good smacks to him. And that is the two smacks are the two next verses, if you look at it. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Kudastvam Kashmalamidam Vishame Samubastidam Anaryajushtam Aswargyam Akirtim Karam Arjunam Klaibhyam Asmagama Partha Naidatvayubabadhyade Chudram Hanaya Naurbalyam Tekto Tishta Parandava. Two verses. In these two verses, there is no philosophy or anything. It is just the two smacks on Arjuna from Krishna's side. The first time, Krishna decided to speak. Krishna is going to talk now. So, he says here, Kutastva kashmalamidam vishame samuvastidam. Krishna says there, Kutastva kashmalamidam kashmalam. Arjuna, he says to Arjuna, first instructions. One who has got pure consciousness, that is Arjuna, Hrujabuddhi. Then, how did this situation happen to you? That you have become so weak and you are sitting there like this. And Kodastva Kashmalamidam. Kashmala means Analpa Vastu. Analpa Vastu means something what you are not. What you are not. To think that they are real, that is Kashmalam. That is Kashmalam. So this word Kashmalam is an important word. That to take something which is not real. Which is not real. As well as Krishna is concerned, material body is not a real thing. That you must not forget. Material body is not a real thing. Identifying with the body itself is an indication of ignorance. So Krishna is beginning with this understanding. Kutastva kashmalam idam. Where did this kashmalam comes to you? Because to accept something which is not a truth, material body, your body is not a reality. Their bodies are not reality. Who? The Kaurava's body. That's also not reality. But you have accepted. That means you are starting talking to me from the platform of body, from the bodily platform. And Vishame Samupastidam. The result of that is you have fallen into the Vishamam state. This Vishadam has come to you. And Kashmalam definition is there. What is Kashmalam means? Kashmalam definition is that Anatma Chittanam Tektva Kashmalam Dukkha Karanam Chindaya Atmanam Anandam Rupam in Mukti Karanam. This is the definition of Kashmalam. Anatma Chittanam Tektva Kashmalam Dukkha Karanam. Giving up the thought of the non-self, which is evil and productive of misery. Think of the self, the bliss absolute, which conduces to liberation. Analpa chindanam tektva kashmalam dukhakaranam. If you identify with the body, which is called analpa chindanam. Analpa chindanam means thinking about body, which is not the alma, which is not the soul. Analpa chindanam tektva kashmalam dukhakaranam. It becomes the cause of your distress. Kashmalam, that is kashmalam. Analpa chindanam tektva kashmalam dukhakaranam. Dukhakaranam means the cause of the distress for all of us in this world is because of this. That we have given up the understanding that we are the soul. And we have thought that we are the body. Two mistakes. First thing, we have identified that we are not the soul. We have thought we are not the soul. Second mistake, instead, whatever we've done, we have identified that we are the body. Both are mistakes, isn't it? So, analpa chindanam tektva kashmalam dukha karanam. That is the cause of the distress. Chindayatmanam anandam rupam yen mukti karanam. As soon as you move yourself to the position of the soul, it becomes the cause of your happiness, anandam. Anandam in mukti karanam. That becomes the cause of your happiness in this world as well. So, you can see the word kashmalam and anandam. Kashmalam is the distressful condition coming from this avidya, from ignorance. So, having said that, Krishna says here that the point, what Krishna is trying to say here is that this kashmalam has come to you because of this jada shariram, identity with jadam, dead matter, the shariram. the thing which is not the soul, which is not you, you are identifying with that. And how did this avidya increase in us? Because if you look at ourselves, 90% of our time is spent on the body, isn't it? In the day, 90% of our time is spent on this body. It is so much that we are absorbed in the body, maintaining this body, working for this body, and resting this body. For what? All for the body purpose. So by engaging in the service of the body for so many hours in every day, our identification with the body has become very strong. This is what has happened. That not only that, we also have the fear what will happen to this body tomorrow. This is another fear within us. And apart from that, many other bodies which are dependent on this body, what will happen to that body if anything happens to this body? This way, this web is constantly frightening us. And because of that fear, we are engaged in so many activities in this world. The whole world is running on this principle, isn't it? So therefore, Krishna is saying there that so long as this goes on, you will be in Vishamistani. There will never be any perfection or happiness in life. It is not possible. Because something what we are not, we are caught on to that. And we are saying, I am this. So what can you do? So that is the point what Krishna is making here. The thing what does not exist, as far as Krishna is concerned, this body doesn't exist. Because it is not a truth. Krishna said this Ekadasha Skandam also. So many times he has mentioned this, isn't it? Yadidam manasovaja chakshubhyam sharvanadibi nashwaram grihyamanam cha vidhimaya manomayam. In the Ekadasha Skandam verses. That nashwaram, temporary it is. And also my mind, ears, eyes, these things have created all this experience of this body. Manaso vaja chakshubhyam sharvanadibi nashwaram grihimanamcha vidhi mayamanomayam. Mayamayam it is and manomayam it is, both. It has come from Maya, product of Maya, material nature, and it is also based on the mind that we are identifying with this. So, if you understand these words, what Krishna is saying to Arjuna, obviously, Arjuna would not straight away has accepted, understood it, but it had some impact on Arjuna. These words did create some impact on Arjuna, that he started thinking there is something wrong with me, that some wrong identity I have taken. That's what Krishna is saying. I have taken a wrong identity. So there must be something wrong with me. So Krishna succeeded in creating this doubt in Arjuna's mind. Up to this point, Arjuna had no doubt. Like we all have no doubt, isn't it, about anything. We are all clear, straight in our head, that we are so perfect in everything what we do, and we are clear that the result will come properly, and this foolishness in us is there in Arjuna as well. But Krishna's point was, with these words, Krishna created certain doubt in Arjuna's mind. Kutastva kashmalamidam vishame samupastidam. That in this situation, what you are in today, it's your own creation, nobody else's. So, there Krishna is saying that there is a great personality called Bhartrahari. You may or may not have heard, he lived in the time of Kalidas and others. Bhartrahari wrote a beautiful poem where he says like this. We live in this world is like this. The distress what we are carrying with us. For what? He says like this. One, he is saying here that we are anxious about wealth, what we don't have yet. We are thinking about that. When will I acquire the wealth? That's one. We are thinking about the wealth, what our ancestors had, or we've lost all that. Few generations before, some families were very wealthy. In due course, some of them became pauper, and some of the families were very poor, they became very rich. This is the cycle in this world, how it goes on. If you take all this very seriously, and some people are regretting, oh, three generations ago, my great-great-grandfather, they were the lord of the this place, or earl of that, or this, or baroness, or whatever. In that way, if you start thinking and feeling sorry about all that, now what are we today? We are nothing. And you are regretting about that and suffering from that. That's one. Similarly, you are thinking about the wealth what you have not got yet. You are thinking about the wealth what you haven't achieved yet. Similarly, also, if you worry about things which hasn't come to you, which you have not succeeded in acquiring yet, in different things, you are suffering for all these things. Bhartrahari calls that as kashmalam. That's also kashmalam. So this kashmalam is a word used in that respect, that identify with things in which you have no connections. You have no connections. Just like in this world, people are working very hard to increase their wealth, assets, isn't it? Assets. And in different forms, in the form of gold, in the form of stocks and shares, in the form of properties, in the form of various ways, people try to increase their assets. This is kashmalam. It's nothing but kashmalam. Only when you come to the spiritual platform, you can look at it this in this way and accept Krishna's instructions. That Maya can do all these things. But sometimes in the industrial world, where we are a part of that, we live in the industrial world, you don't unless you get hit by this, you don't wake up from that. Just like Lehman Brothers, you saw what happens. Lehman Brothers were one time they were saying, oh, they were doing so well, they're paying such high bonuses to the staff and so much profits. But there's so much cheating behind everything going on. And they, when it blew up, only a week before that, the chief is saying that company will become stronger, will come back from its weaknesses to higher strength, and this nonsense all he was talking. So is there any difference between him and the way Arjuna was thinking? There's not much difference, isn't it? Arjuna was also thinking, but Arjuna was more more civilized or more cultured in that way. At least he had that compassion for them, not to exploit them. But this lord doesn't have even that. They go such low levels to make money, and to think that cheating and lying and thieving people and making wealth is the only business in life, but always dressed up nicely with the suit and the tie. Very, very, very impressive to the world outside. And they are the people who are worshipped in this world, such personalities. So this is happening all the time. People are helpless. What can they do? They are watching this, seeing this day after day, and helplessly goes on. Anyway, Kashmalam, the word means to hold on to something which is not real, which is untrue, which is false, and to come to this understanding, Vishamaya Samubhasthidam, feeling this unhappiness in life. Krishna is saying there, Kutastuva Kashmalamidam Vishamaya Samubhasthidam Anaryajushtam Aswargyam Akirtim Karam Arjuna. Anaryajushtam Aswargyam Akirtim Karam Arjuna. Krishna says to all Arjuna, Arjuna himself, he has called as Arjuna. He didn't call him anything else, Dhananjaya or anything. Call Arjuna. Arjuna, try to understand this, he says. What you are doing now is because of your this Kashmala Buddhi, Kashmala in the intelligence, Vishamaya Samupasthitam, you have fallen into this depressed state. You have fallen into this depressed state, Vishamam, Vishamasthiti. And Anarya Jushtam, this is not fitting to the Aryans. This doesn't fit to the Aryans. Arya means, in Shastram, the word Arya means one who is Shrestha. Shrestha means one who is highly cultured within, highly cultured, who won't do a low-class thing, who won't do a low-class behavior. They are Aryans. People have misunderstood the word Aryans. Aryans is a race, they think. It's not a race. From the Vedic point of view, the word Arya means who is highly cultured. Highly cultured. And in other words, they will not engage in any low-class activity. Any low-class activity. Low-class means that their activities will be so perfect. People with principles. They won't exploit others. They will do what good they can for others. That is the way they are. The consciousness is. That is the consciousness of an Arya. Arya means that Shrestha, the highness in their thinking. Not low class thinking, but upper class thinking, higher class thinking. So, an Arya Jishtam. This is an Aryam, not Arya. It doesn't fit the Arya. Arjuna is an Arya. Shrestha he is. Unfortunately, what happened was, this word Arya has been misunderstood very much. Even in India, quite a bit. Why? How did that happen? Because at one point in time in the history, when the Europeans started analyzing Indian history, they came across this word. And these historians developed a type of knowledge which is completely false, doesn't fit in with any of the Shastram. They said that Aryans are a race of people who came from somewhere from the Middle East or somewhere like that to India, to Bharatavarsham, and they settled down and they defeated the local inhabitants, which are the Dravidas, and they have moved to the south and they occupied the northern India and they created a new race theory like this. The intention behind it was to create split among the people and to make them fight each other. So the Arya-Dravida theory has come out from that, from the historians and who wrote our history. It is their story. They wrote our story, the historians from the West. They wrote the story and they propagated that. And some of the personalities within it, because it's all based on their so-called research. And based on the research, they say Aryans came from outside. The local people who lived in Bharatavarsham previously was the Dravidas. The Aryans and the Dravidas fought each other, and the Dravidas were pushed to the south, and the Aryans stayed in the north. If you look, take this theory seriously, then you will not be able to study Shastram, because Shastram completely rejects this. Actually, Bharatavarsham is divided into different ways. It is not based on races. All those who were born in the Bharatavarsham or who had connection with Bharatavarsham, Vedic culture who followed that, they all belong to, they are all Aryas, in the sense that they follow strictly these traditions of the sages who have given us this higher culture. Sages have given us higher understanding of life. They gave us this understanding that human life is meant for perfecting it for spiritual realization. And in order to support that, they give us a lifestyle of Varnashrama Dharma. So those who follow those, they are the Aryans. And it was followed by all those people who lived in the Bharatavarsham from time immemorial. The division in India, division in Bharatavarsham is like this. Based on the land, is called a particular land. Dravidam is called, it is called Panjadravidam. Similarly, Panjagaudam. That is how the division in the past is. Now it's all changed. But in the past, it was divided, called as Panjadravidam and Panjagaudam. Panjadravidam means Gujarat, Maharashtra, Karnataka, Andhra and Tamil Nadu, which is currently. These five states are called Panjadravidam. And Panjagaudam is Bengal, Utkalam, Orissa, Kanyakumjam, and Maithilam, and Kashmiram. So these five states, they are referred to as Panjagaudam, and the other states are five states are called as Panjadravidam. So Panjagaudam and Panjadravidam were called in this way, but it has nothing to do with the people who lived there. Land was called like that. Aryans didn't come to Bharatavarsham from outside. Aryans are those people who lived in Bharatavarsham for all the time. So somehow or the other, historians created all this kind of false theory, and that was propagated, and this was still being taught in the universities and colleges, even in India, and people are studying this, and they are also getting misled equally. The situation is as bad as elsewhere in India. Because of the education, what is being followed ever since, even after 40, 50 years after independence. This is the same situation. So, anyway, Anarya Yushtam means it's not suiting the Aryans. Aswargyam means it does not help even to go to the heavenly planets if you engage in this way. And not only that, Akirtim, it will bring you bad reputation. These Arjuna and all that, they are fearful about getting a bad reputation, a bad name. They have that fear inside. Fear means it's a respect to themselves that it is not proper to behave like that. I have done something seriously wrong in my life, behaved properly, improper way. So therefore, he could not accept that kind of behavior. And therefore, he says there that this is unfortunate. Krishna says to Arjuna, this word Arya, if you look in the Vedas, is mentioned in three places. That's all. It's mentioned in three places. Sita Devi calls Sri Ramachandra as Aryaputra. Sita Devi calls Sri Ramachandra as Aryaputra. Ramachandra calls Sita Devi as Arya. In that way, few places you will see this word mentioned. It is not referring to any race. Arya is not a reference to any race. So, he says to him, Arjuna was the symptom of ability, isn't it? As a man, he was so able. And here you find an Arjuna fully weak, unable to fight, and sitting there in fully depressed and morose condition. When he saw that, Krishna decided to call him by another name, and that is the next verse, verse 3. Klaibhyam asmagam apartha neidattayubabhadyade chudram hadayadorbalyam tekto tishta parantapam. In the earlier verse, Krishna said, kutastva kashmalamidam vishame samubastidam anavaryajushtam asvargyam akirtim karam Arjuna. When Krishna saw Arjuna's distress, he says, hey, Arjuna, anarya jushtam, not meant for the people who are Aryas. Aswargyam, not good for going to the heavenly planets. akirtikaram, and it creates only bad reputation. Idam kashmalam, where did this ignorance come to you? Where did this ignorance come to you? Kuta, what reason? And vishame, at the right appropriate time, when you require courage, it is then that this has happened to you. How did this samupasthitam, how did this happen to you? Now here you can see that Krishna has already, whenever Krishna spoke to anyone, any time, you will notice Krishna speaks with a smile. Why? Because Krishna knows that the nature, because it is spirit soul, isn't it? Krishna is the soul. Soul never gets affected by any kind of distress. We have mentioned this many, many times before, isn't it? Soul has no distress. Soul's nature is Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. That is soul. Nitya means it is eternal. We also say Satta Chitta Anandam, isn't it? Eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge. That is the soul. So, Nityam, it is eternal. Shuddham, it is very pure. Soul is very pure. Then, Buddha Mukta Swarupam. Buddha means it's always conscious of everything. And Muktam, it's always liberated. This is the nature of the soul. Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta. That is the nature of the soul. And it is that soul is suffering like this in the Vishamaya Samupasthitam. It appears like that from Arjuna's words. So Krishna's point was like this, that any time when Krishna saw that somebody is in distress, it means that he is in ignorance. He is in ignorance. Somebody constantly experiencing distress in life, it is only means that he is constantly is in ignorance. That's all. Tamogunam has, from ajnanam comes dukham. From ignorance comes distress, not from anything else. Just from ignorance, from ajnanam comes dukkham. So Krishna, because of that, asked this question to Arjuna, that klaibhyam masmagama partha naidatva yuva badyade. Klaibhyam. This was a very heavy word to use on Arjuna. Klaibhyam means kleban. Kleba means one who is neither a man nor a woman. Eunuch, isn't it? So how have you become to like this? Like neither a man nor a woman. You are sitting here like this in this state of mind and crying. Tears are coming. Ashravurna kuleshanam. Tears are coming from Arjuna's eyes. And Krishna is smiling and saying this. You are just a kleban. Kleban means you are a nabumsakam. Or the way to say neither man nor woman. You are crying like this, in this way. What is it behind this? He says, Klaibhyam masmagama partha na upabadhyade. It does not fit you. Because you are not this type of person. So why did this happen to you? Hridaya daurbhalyam tektva. Give up this weakness of your heart. Tektva uttishta. Get up and fight. Get up and fight for the war. And this is the way Krishna has mentioned this to Arjuna. So these two verses, there is no philosophy in there. But in order to make Arjuna realize that there is something wrong with you also, it's not that everything world outside is wrong. You are also something wrong. That one who is very weak, in his mind, Krishna is saying that it is not a good sign. It's a weakness. Nayam alma balahinena alabhya. That one who is balahinen, one who is weak, he cannot have achieved success in spiritual life. Spiritual life is strength. And that strength, nayam alma balahinena alabhya. That balahinen, one who is very weak, he cannot have spiritual life. Spiritual realization cannot happen to him. That important point here is that the two verses which Krishna has spoken has also another significance. The significance is this. The war which Arjuna was fighting there is the same war we are fighting in this world, isn't it? We are also fighting a war in this world. For what is that war? Our war, of course. The war what we are fighting now is just maintaining the body, which is the lower than what Arjuna was fighting for. Just to maintain this body, we have to go through all this. And it's a constant endeavor, fighting against all the good and bad things inside going on. But higher than that, even on a spiritual plane, if we come to, Krishna's point is that unless you have strength within you, you cannot execute spiritual life. You cannot execute spiritual life. It is a Upanishad statement. Krishna has taken that and put it here. Because it comes from the Mundaka Upanishad. That what is required for spiritual life? You see, destiny we say. We say destiny, isn't it? Destiny does not affect spiritual life. If destiny affects spiritual life, then all Shastram and all Krishna's instructions, everything is just a waste of time. Destiny affects spiritual life, then liberation is not possible. Because if I say to everybody, look, my destiny is to suffer here. And if I can't change that destiny, what's the point in me working for liberation? My destiny is like this. No. As far as spiritual life and self-realization is concerned, destiny cannot touch you. Destiny cannot touch you on self-realization. Destiny is there. Your prarabdham is there for the body, for the mind, for the senses, for your material happiness. But spiritual progress, spiritual realization, destiny cannot even touch you on that. That's the point Krishna is making here through these verses. That if you are determined to make it a success, spiritual life a success, in this life it is possible. Not only Krishna says, when you go further, you will see something more what Krishna says. What we should do in spiritual life. When you call it life a success spiritually, that also Krishna will explain later. So whatever thing is, Krishna is saying here, this doesn't suit you. Because of your weakness in your heart, that you are unable to think further. And generally, our nature is, when we have a distress like this, what do? We go to psychiatrist or psychologist or something like that for advice. Or we go to some swamis or yogis or gurus for advice, saying that if they can help. But the important thing is here is, it is come from the weakness of our own heart, Hridaya Daurbalyam. Hridaya Daurbalyam. We have allowed our heart to become weak due to ignorance inside. Due to ignorance inside. So that's the point Krishna is making here. So the thing here is that if the individual or the jiva had proper vasana inside, shubha vasana, auspicious vasanas inside, he would have acquired sufficient spiritual knowledge to keep himself strong in this world. That means under all negative circumstances, he will still able to come through with that without being disturbed over it. That is the strength from spiritual life. Because spiritual knowledge will give him that strength what is required to fight through in all ignorant situations. But in order to do that, Krishna says here that the jiva has to decide that first. Jiva has to decide that first. If jiva doesn't make that decision, that this is what I want in my life, then I have seen enough of this world and I have understood there is nothing much to enjoy here. There's nothing much to enjoy here. All that I get by dealings with the transactions in this world is only simply distress and misery. And I am not in a position to alter the situation because the world is going in its own way. You have no control over the situation. And a stage will come in life, people will accept it at some point. Intelligent thing is to accept it by observing the life properly. But some people don't learn, they realize it after experiencing it a lot, distress in life, and some people even then they don't accept it. So Krishna was saying here to Arjuna that in this very life, if one has that determination to make this life, that I have to achieve perfection in this life. Perfection means shanti, complete peace within oneself. And in this thing in Shastram, when one makes that decision within oneself, that this is what I need in my life, I want to become peaceful within me. And when he makes that decision, that is called in Shastram as Mumukshatvam. Mumukshatvam, isn't it? Durlabham Trayameva Idal Devanugrahetukam Manishyatvam Mumukshatvam Mahapurusha Samshaya. This Mumukshatvam is this, that we ourselves be making the decision that I want this peace in this lifetime. In this lifetime, I want to achieve that peace. Shanti, as it is referred to. Tadaparam Shanti Mubaydi Sarshan. Shanti is the goal, peace within oneself. How that peace will come. And I'm looking for, you may say that it is selfishness, isn't it? People will say like this. Have you seen many times people say, is it not selfish? They will ask. Yes, this selfishness is good. Because if you develop this selfishness, that this selfishness, if you develop that, no power on this earth can go against that. Ajahn Swamiji says this. If you have this selfishness within you, that I want to become perfect in my spiritual life. In other words, I want to realize the truth. I want to free myself from the identity with the body, which I have falsely identified, and come to this real, the truthful position as the self, as the soul, and this decision, and through that, I will become peaceful. That, because Shastra is telling me, that's the only way that I can become peaceful. If I become peaceful in that way, that's my goal. And nothing else in this world is important to me. Nothing else in this world is important to me. If you make that decision, that is called mumukshatvam. Krishna says there, I want perfection. I want peace within myself. I want perfection. I want peacefulness. And that decision is in our hands. That not anybody else's hands. If you say, I want to make my body happy. If you say, I want to make my body perfect. I want to make my material life perfect. Krishna says, don't waste your time. It is never going to be perfect. I keep on repeating the same point again and again and again, because in our inside we have a different ideology which has stuck there for a long period of time. How to fix the body all the time, how to fix our material life all the time. Material life and body is concerned, it will go its own way. That prarabdha will drive you, whichever way it goes. You don't have to make any decisions on that. Whether you make the decision or not, it will come in its own way. That happiness and distress, what is allotted. Vishavasavidam sarvam tene taktej gunchida. So, but spiritual life is concerned, all these things have no relevance. They cannot affect that. So Krishna says here, suppose if I decide, as far as my body is concerned, I make a decision. I want to live up to 100 years. Will it happen? It won't happen, because that is not in my control. I want to stay free from illnesses. Will that happen? No. I have no freedom on all these things. It will come, it will go. That is the nature of this body. Even the body itself is false, where it's a question of the diseases that comes to it. And one sage used to say that it is the disease for the disease. Body itself is a disease. And you are getting another disease on the body. In other words, a disease for the disease. What's already there. So these are the things to remember. That we have no freedom to do anything in respect to the body, in respect to our life in this world is concerned, in respect to our material happiness is concerned. We have no freedom. But we have complete freedom in relationship with the spiritual life and spiritual realization, self-realization. We have complete freedom. Only thing, Krishna says, all the sages are telling us, that you have to make this decision within yourself, that this is what I want in life. If we use spiritual life for our material happiness, it is not going to work. Temporarily, you may feel some little relief from material problems, temporarily. But spiritual life and material life are two different things. Material life will become less troublesome if your spiritual life is going very well. Because then your identification with the body goes away, and thereby you feel a relief from the material problems also. But the freedom is actually, freedom is your, this is the only freedom what we have. This is the only freedom what we have. Everything else is destiny. We cannot put our hand in anything else. That's not possible. And nothing will happen the way we think about life. We think about life, nothing will happen in that way. You may think something, something else will happen. As I said, what control have we got on this body? Nothing. What control have we got on this mind? Nothing. Everything is working independently, isn't it? We if you look at our own body, you can see that within this body, the digestive system, the circulatory system, the breathing system, everything is working independently. We have no idea how these things are going on. Okay, doctors may say this and that, but at the end of the day, we are not conscious of that. But what am I conscious about? I'm conscious about my existence. I'm existing. That's the only thing I have. So, and that is the only truth in this body. Everything else is false as well. Body is, because of his presence, the soul's presence, in other words, all these things are happening inside the body. And the moment soul withdraw from this, all these functions also stop along with that. That is why Krishna says, if you make up this decision and to become perfect, at least if this decision has become firm in your mind before death, before giving up this body, Krishna says, you are a sthita prajna. Sthita prajna. That means you have reached the goal. You have reached the goal. If you look into the second chapter, the very last verse. What does Krishna say there? Second chapter, the last verse. I think it is the verse 72. 72. Krishna calls it as Brahmi Sthiti. Have you noticed that? Esha Brahmi Sthiti. This state of consciousness is called Brahmi Sthiti. Esha Brahmi Sthiti Partha Nainam Prapya Vimuhyadi Stitvasya Andhakalebi Brahma Nirvana Mruchyadi. Arjuna, hey Partha, Brahmi Sthiti. Brahmi Sthiti means Brahma Jnana Nishtha. That means situated in one's constitutional position as the soul. Brahma Nishtha it's called. Different words is used. Don't worry about the terminologies because they all mean the same thing. Brahmi Sthiti means Brahma Jnana Nishtha. Another place you will call it as Sthita Prajnyatvam. This is the same thing. Esha is like this, he says, if somehow if a person has reached that state, then after doing that, once you have reached that state of that decision you have made and you are carrying on with that decision in your life, throughout life if you have acted on that platform, you have reached that state of consciousness, then you will not require, you will not have another desire to come back to material existence again. If you reach that state of consciousness, at the tandakalam, andakalepi, means at the time of death, at the time of death, if you have reached that state, then it says here, stitva asyam stitva brahma nirvanam. Even for some time in life, if you have experienced that, sometime, you don't have to be all the time. If sometime in life, if you reach that state of consciousness, Krishna says, he will come back to me at the end. He will come back. He says, yeah, Brahma Nirvana means going back to Krishna. So, Krishna gives a lot of importance to that decision what we have to make. Because if you don't make that decision, it is not possible to identify, to get out of this bodily identity. And this selfishness, as somebody may call it, but that selfishness is good. And this selfishness actually, to think about one's own soul and to go back to spiritual identity is our duty. All other duty in this world is not important. Commitment to the family and and other duty, like people think that they have to save the world, isn't it? These are all foolishness. As far as Krishna is concerned, save yourself first. That is what the best you can do for this world. All the great souls in this world have come to this understanding. After that, after they have come to that state, they become a source of inspiration to others. That is another state. After they have come to this state, Mahatmas, that because they were selfish for themselves, their interest, first they reach that state of consciousness. It is after that they try to help others, not before. Once you have reached that state of consciousness, then you can help others if you want to. Or even if you don't have to go outside helping others, people will come to you looking for help. And they will be help, they'll be properly helped at that point. Properly helped at that point. When you yourself has not reached that state of consciousness, and if you are thinking of helping others, then that's not going to work. That's not going to work. It will all become a disaster in the end. You have not understood the truth yourself, and you are telling the rest of the world to accept the truth from you. Isn't it? This is the situation. We have not realized the truth, and we are telling the rest of the world, now you accept the truth from me, and or I am giving you the truth. If you go in that direction, what will happen is eventually it will be very difficult, because you yourself are doubtful about everything within your own mind, and you haven't experienced that realization what Krishna is saying here. So when we reach that state of consciousness, our mind does not waver or move anymore. It is always peaceful within itself. So therefore, under all circumstances, the mind will be very steady. It will not get disturbed over anything. Whether something good happens or something bad happens, he just executes his activities in this world, unaffected by the result and unaffected by whether it's favorable or unfavorable, and also unaffected by the modes of nature. So, Shudram, he says here, Hrudayablam. So, Shudram Hrudaya Daurbhalyam. So, in order to do that, one requires the strength of heart or strength of the mind. Says Krishna, he says here, this is the yoga sthiti, the situation yoga. And Krishna will call this state as Sthita Prajnatam. Sthita Prajnatam means that you have made that decision. Once the decision is made, and based on that decision, if you have started acting, you will not get disturbed over anything in this world, because your goal is changed now. So you can see from this how important the goal is. If the goal is not correct, then your life will also get disturbed in different states. So that's why Krishna first fixed the goal properly. If the goal is understood properly, and if the goal is become the sole object in life, then all other things in life will get adjusted accordingly to help the goal, to reach the goal. But if we don't have a clear idea about the goal, always mind wavering, today thinking, oh, I'll go back to Goloka, tomorrow I'm thinking, let me live happily here, I got my family with me. Day after tomorrow I'm thinking, oh, I have to achieve so many things in this world. In this way, if the goal keeps shifting all the time, then that person will never make it. That is Krishna's point. Because spiritual life, if it is the highest thing, you have to give us the highest price for it as well. That is the one thing that comes out from that. So Krishna's position point is this, that kudastha kashmalam idam vishame samupasthitam anarijushtam aswargyam akirtim karam Arjuna. Arjuna, it is a situation. Klaibhyam, you are a kliba, masma gamapartha naivatto yupabadhyade chudram hridaya daurbhalyam tetto tishta parandava. This is your weakness on your heart. That's what it is happening to you. Nothing else than that. So all these things one has to bear in mind while discussing these verses. They are all coming from Upanishads, but Krishna has spoken bluntly to Arjuna at this point. And Arjuna is called here as Parantapa. Parantapa means, it has two meanings. Arjuna had two great qualities in him. What was that? One, Parantapa. He can fight with anyone without any fear. Parantapa. He can defeat anyone in the fight. That is one meaning. Another meaning is param tapa. Tapa means one who can execute such severe austerities and penances. Arjuna was very capable of doing that. He had such a mastery, control over his senses and the body. When he executed his different times, he performed severe austerities. They lived in the forest, if you remember, in Mahabharata. You can see there, many 14 years or so. Kunti Devi and the children, they all lived in the forest, lived very, very austere life. Prince royal family members, but they had to wander in the forest, not a proper place to sleep, not proper food to eat, and I had to deal with all kinds of situations in the forest. 14 years they wandered around like this. So what does that mean? Arjuna had that strength to perform such penances, austerities. He is not a weak person. He is a very strong person, Parantapa. That's why Krishna addressed Arjuna as Parantapa here. So having said that, he says here that the only thing is that Arjuna had the strength in him, but the strength was going external. It has to be only directed inwards. Therefore, these austerities are spoken about. Krishna has spoken about this austerity. Austerity everyone performs in this world, not only Arjuna. All of us perform austerities, isn't it? Just like people who are working very hard, they go to office early hours in the morning, come back home very late in the evening. They are also performing austerities. That austerity is different in the sense that the goal is different. The goal is that I have to make a lot of money, or I have to achieve some position in the company or in the management or whatever we are doing. Such goals are different. Or if you are a scientist, you are working very hard to develop some new technology or some research you are doing to become famous with some new inventions or anything like that. So everyone, they all are working very, very hard. That is also tapasya. There is no doubt about that. But the only thing is, these tapasya, what these people are all doing is with different goals, not with the goal of spiritual realization. That's the main difference. When the goal becomes spiritual realization, it becomes different. That means the attention is going inwards, shifting inwards. So here, that you can see here that the energy what you require for performing austerities and penances, whether it is for your material success or for your spiritual success, it's one and the same. It is one and the same. So if you allow all your energy to flow in one direction, you won't have sufficient energy for your prana shakti, it is called. The energy means pranan. Pranan is the energy in a body. We have got one material body. We have got these five senses, mind, intelligence, and it has got a certain period of life, and we also have a certain energy attached to that and allowed from that. So that energy is the same for executing tapasya or executing tapasya for material happiness or for spiritual life. So that's what Krishna is saying here, that this chittavritti, what is normally happening to us is that this constant flow of thoughts that's coming from inside, it develops all sorts of thoughts inside, isn't it? Interaction with the world outside creates different kinds of thoughts. And these different kinds of thoughts develops into a nature in us that in order to survive, we are constantly fighting against it with the external world. With the external world. So, sages or the rishis, they have done a lot of research into all these things. They have done a lot of research into all these things. They were not just sitting there idly sitting there in the forest. They were not lazy people. They were very, very intellectually and also on a higher platform. They were able to engage their thoughts. That was their success. That is why Upanishads were revealed to them because of this. So the sages have come to certain conclusions on all these things. Their conclusions are like this, that out of the, when your energy is directed, when you towards inwards, for realization of the truth, that is known as nivritti. That is known as nivritti. You know these two words, isn't it? There is no substitute for all these words. Better to use the words as they are. When you use your energy, it is directed inwards for realizing the truth, that is called Nivrti. When you use the same energy what we have for achieving success in the world outside, and that is known as Pravrti. That is called Pravrti. So Pravrti and Nivrti, the two words in the Shastram, is nothing but this. When we direct our energy in different directions, when it goes outside for looking for material happiness, for success in material world, it becomes Pravrti. And when it goes inwards, looking for spiritual realization and to free ourselves from the material identity and come back to your true identity as the soul, then it becomes Nivrti. So this decision, after a lot of research and experiments, they found out that this can only happen, this change can only happen from Pravrti to Nivrti, if the Jiva makes that decision first. Jiva has to make that decision. It is known as Sankalpam. So if Jiva doesn't make the decision, it is not possible to happen. And there is no technique for that. Sometimes people say that, is there any technique they're looking for? They're looking for technique in spiritual life. Can you imagine? People are like that. They want some technique in spiritual life. They think it is some kind of a, by technology and technique you can sort out your spiritual problems. This is the foolishness. So that's why, the other day I saw one advertisement. It was funny, I thought. It's an e-course on Bhagavad Gita with quizzes, puzzles, and something else I mentioned. If you keep Bhagavad Gita in this level of quizzes and puzzles, what will happen? Where will you be? You can play the quizzes and puzzles the rest of the life. That's all what it will be. Nothing else will happen. Such a serious matter and serious topic, Krishna has spoken to Arjuna, and we have brought it down to an e-course with quizzes and puzzles. And some $40-$50 or something you pay. And rest of the life you can study Bhagavad Gita like this. And if you go to the website, you'll find all this. I won't mention the website because I'll be in trouble. But this is the type of people we are. Whom should we blame? We are like this. This is what we want also. We are very happy it comes online, isn't it? Online is very good. So all problems are solved online. So anyway, such a serious matter, these sages and the rishis and Krishna and the acharyas, they have performed such tapasya behind it to develop this understanding, and we want it online, all these things. How fallen we are, imagine that. How ignorant are we? Okay. Is there any more, at least before this computer was invented, these things didn't exist. With the invention of the computer, we are bringing the truth, absolute truth, to our level instead of us coming up to that level. We want to bring the absolute truth, the highest knowledge in this world, into our platform, our level of consciousness, which is not going to work. The only thing we can do is to elevate ourselves to that level whereby we can understand the truth. Otherwise, how are we going to understand the truth? This is what Krishna is talking about. Elevate yourself, not bring it down to your level. So these people are reading this Bhagavad Gita, and they are distributing all this Bhagavad Gita, but this understanding is not coming. All this false understanding has come, and it's going on like this. I don't know how many lifetimes this will go on like this. Whatever it is, Krishna is saying here that the freedom what you want is this, that somehow or the other this resolve inside, I want to become free. Free from what? Freedom from the body, freedom from the mind, freedom from the senses, freedom from the intelligence, freedom from the false ego. All these are upadhis on me. My true identity is the soul. I am soul. Why did I bring all this upon me? It has come to me now. I have to escape from this. And this decision we have to make first. We have to make that first. how to free ourselves from all these things. Because Krishna says, unless you free from all these things, perfect shanti, peace is not going to come. These are fundamental things. We have to accept it as it is, without any questioning. And unless we wholeheartedly absorb it and accept it within us, our activities will not go in that direction. The Shraddha won't be there. So Krishna gives an importance to this. In one important point Krishna is making here is that this decision what you are making in spiritual life is the first thing is that you want to free yourself from this condition. That it's all right telling the rest of the world that you have to preach, you have to preach. Preaching is all right. Preaching is, if you are put into that situation, you have to do it. But important than that thing, more than that is that how you take it. That how much has it affected you, the individual? That these words of Krishna, how has it affected me? That is more important than anything else. And if Krishna's words has affected you, then naturally you will make that decision. And if Krishna's words has not affected you, then the decision will never happen like the Dhritarashtra. So, coming to this Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying here that it is not easy to come to that decision. That problem, Krishna recognizes that. That recognition, why it is not easy? Because the jiva finds a certain happiness through senses in this world, isn't it? Sense gratification through different senses, what little happiness we get in this world, although it is not perfect, there is some happiness there. Sense gratification, sensual happiness. So when you get sensual happiness, you are little hesitant to give it up. When will you give it up? That also Krishna says. What is that? When you see that sense happiness is only bringing distress at the end. Every sensual happiness will be followed by distress. That also you can see. Just like suppose you want to have some sense enjoyment. Any sense enjoyment if you take. You want to enjoy it to the maximum. Say a big feast you want to have. You ate very well. And you ate so well that you got sick. You will get sick because senses can only handle so much, isn't it? Senses are controlled by demigods. There are different demigods for different senses. So if you excessively use those senses, abuse them, you will be in trouble. If all the senses are like that. Eyes, you watch television for more than a certain time, eyes become very strained. Or play any computer games, eyes will get strained. Or if you listen to anything for a long period of time, that you want to free yourself from that, isn't it? So every sense gratification has got that problem with the senses. So sensual happiness also cannot last very long. But eventually when you start recognizing that there is distress in everything coming from the sense enjoyment, and also by observation in this world of other living entities and rest of the things what's happening in the world, one should come to this conclusion that what is available on offer in this world is nothing but distress. Nothing but distress. Dukkhani alokya jandushu alamudidam vivegam koham acharya varyaha Labdhua todruva tattvam guna charita kata ulbhaval bhakti bhumaha. That dukhani alokyam, that looking at the world, all you are observing is dukkham, distress everywhere, in one form or the other. When we don't see the distress in the world, that means we are blind, isn't it? Distress is going on everywhere. Where is there is no distress? You cannot see one place where there is no distress. Distress is everywhere. We try to run away from the distress in some way or the other. That's what we do. We don't want to get involved in many things. But when you see another living entity suffering in this world, naturally, if your consciousness and realization is good, you will experience distress. You will experience that distress. So many things naturally created disasters, the wars, and the diseases. So many things all creating distress in this world. added to that, our own individual distress, which comes from our own problems with our own body, our own mind, and our own existence in this world, our fight against the other living entities in this world for our own survival, our own false ego affecting us at different times in different ways. So, sum total of all these things is nothing but distress. But to come to this understanding that there is distress in this world, one only then this decision will become firm of escaping from here. Otherwise, desire for escaping also won't happen in us. We will think, it's all right, we'll get on with life. Get on with life, they say, isn't it? Get on with life. What get on with life? This is what is on offer. So what is there to get on with? So the thing to understand is this, that Dukhani Alokyam, by seeing the distress in this world, an intelligent person, all the great sages, great acharyas have seen distress. Because they can go above that and think why people are suffering like this, and their compassion for us. That is why the rishis went to the forest and executed such severe austerities, because they were able to search the truth, seeing the distress everywhere. And therefore, that is the reason. What will happen if you do that? Dukhani Alokya Jandushu. All other living entities suffering. When you see that, Vivekam. Vivekam will come. Vivekam means this ability to discriminate. Discriminate what? Discriminate this thing. That everything else is temporary in this world. They have no real existence. And I am stuck with this, all this nonsense. What's going on around? I want to free myself from this. To look for the permanent thing or the absolute thing, which is the soul. So that shift from temporary, false things to the right thing, which is permanent and truthful, which is the soul, can only happen when one experiences distress to a very large level. It will quickly develop inside. But when does not experience distress, it has to come by natural intelligence from a person. When he is observing, he should be able to think like that. That there is distress in this world. It's no point in looking for happiness here. Jandushu alamudhita vivekam koham acharya varyaha. It was at that point the proper inquiry begins inside about the truth. Labdhva tadrupa tattvam. At that point, by the mercy of your acharya or the sages, one will get to know the tattvam, the truth. That is called a tattvam. Tattvam is this. Labdhva tadrupa tattvam. Tadrupa tattvam means the real truth about Krishna. We will get at that point. We will understand that Krishna is behind everything. And when we know Krishna is behind everything, what will happen next thing? We want to go back to Krishna and take Krishna's support, Krishna's help. Labdhva tadrupa tattvam guna charita gada ulbhaval bhakti bhumaha. It is at that point we start inquiring after Krishna and want to hear about Krishna, glorify Krishna, guna charita gata ulbhaval bhakti bhuma, and that is the beginning of bhakti. That's the beginning of bhakti. Bhakti is not all the rituals what we do in the temples and at home and whatever it is. Bhakti is this, that proper understanding and analysis of this world and seeing the distress in this world, we have come to a deeper understanding inside that this is not the place to look for happiness. My misery is due to my own ignorance of my forgetting my true identity as a spirit soul. I have identified falsely with my body, and I should start this process of spiritual life whereby I free myself from the bodily identity to the spiritual identity. And that discrimination has come to me, and along with that the vairagyam also will come. So vivekam and vairagyam, discrimination and renunciation will come, and they are two things are called as the two wings for advancing in spiritual life. For advancing in spiritual life. Vivekoham acharya varya labdhva tudrupa tattvam guna charita gatha ulbhaval bhakti bhumam. Krishna says this, that if you have come to this platform, Krishna says, tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yoga sam idam. He will talk about that in the second chapter. That if you have developed this knowledge in you by observing this world and by your own discrimination, then whatever distress comes in life or happiness comes in life, or some of the people who are with you today, if they get separated from you, or some people come and join you with you. This is what is called tam vidya. This knowledge will start working at that time. Because samyogam viyogam, the association of people and separation from people is also distress, isn't it? Very close relatives and close family members. When they are with you, you feel happy. When they are separated from you, you feel unhappy. That is samyoga viyogam. Krishna is saying here, if you have this knowledge inside, their coming and going will not affect you. The coming and going of the members of the family, that will, or close relatives. Tam vidya dukkha samyoga viyogam. And this samyoga viyogam, which brings happiness and distress, due to the presence of the family members or relatives or whatever that is, a person who has developed this vivekam and vairagyam inside, he will not be affected by that. Tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yoga sam idam. He is situated in yoga. At that time, he is called in yogic state. Krishna says like that here. So having said that, this is a very important stage in life. This decision making is a very important stage in life. Jnanis call it as Shubhecha. That is the stage they call it as Shubhecha. Shubhecha means this stage of making that decision. And I have seen enough in this world. And I've seen enough in this world. And if I have not made this decision yet, sometimes we also, for some time we think, yeah, it's all like that. But then we say, next time the mind will come, start working. What will the mind will start talking to us? Mind will tell us, why do you want to give up all this happiness in this world? Why don't you enjoy? There is so much still to enjoy. You know, spiritual life has nothing to do with that. If when mind start influencing us, you will see that affects your spiritual life also. It is then that you take the beats bag in the hand and will watch the football match on the television and you will be chanting. It is at that stage. At different levels you can see that when the mind starts dictating to you how to live your spiritual life, it is at that stage you will be doing spiritual life, but you will be still engaging your senses in the sense gratification. You have not become serious yet about it. So that's what this point Krishna is making here. Now, when we are talking about this, this is only a simple thing. That this is called, in one way, it is called bhavana. Bhavana means imagination, isn't it? In sangalpam, or in within oneself. That this conviction in within self, that a devotee who is always serious about spiritual life, he will have no attraction for material happiness. He'll have no attraction for material happiness. He will try to minimize that. Ultimately, he knows there is not much happiness is there in that. So he withdraws his senses from everything. Whereas those who are attached still to material happiness, what will happen to them? Just like I was mentioning before, the serials in the television or cinema, things like that. If throughout the year one is watching serial and one is watching the movies and taking all the distress what is in the serial and the movie within oneself, then what is going to happen? That will become your problem at the end, isn't it? So Krishna is saying all these things are problems and they'll come and stand inside. And they will, these different association is very important here. Association with objects, association with other persons who have no spiritual desire, that association also, who has no spiritual desire, who are materially motivated, their association, if they get into your heart, and all the serials and the cinemas, what you have seen, that also, they will become very strong inside, and one day they will show their head up. And Krishna says, if this happens to you, then that the problem will be like this. He says that at the time of death they will control you. And because this important point, Krishna, the different impressions what we have created inside, and that has become very, very firm, deeply rooted inside. And nobody can take it away from you. Nobody can take it away from you. Because we have created this ourselves. Krishna is saying like this. You have gone and associated with all this nonsense. And you have created these strong impressions within yourself. And Krishna says that if those impressions become very, very strong, very, very strong, and you have not made any decision about spiritual life, at the time of leaving this body, two verses, Krishna summarized the whole thing. Yam yam vavismaran bhavam tejatyande kalevaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sada tadbhava bhavita. Isn't it? At the time of giving up this body, yam yam vavismaran bhavam, whatever form your thoughts are coming through your head at that time, or through your mind, and if they are very strong and powerful thoughts of what you have created as vasanas inside, from your association with the world, outside, from people, individuals, and from objects, all that will come up very strongly in front of you. Tam tam evaidi kaundaya sadat adbhava bhavida. Accordingly, you have to come back with another body, material body. Andhakalecha mameva smaran tektua kalevaram yaprayasida madbhavam yadidastyatra samshaya. On the other hand, one who has made this decision about the soul, that he wants to realize the truth right now, and he has worked very hard on that throughout life, keeping that as the objective in life, and he has attained some success in life, and that strong thought inside, Krishna says, will come up to him at the time of death also. And that means he will come back to me. This is very simple. This is a law. Nobody can change it. This is Krishna's law. Krishna is very firm on this law because the law is there. He has told us the law that according to your... So this is the reason why we say shift your attention from outside to inwards. Krishna is inside as the soul. So this shifting is important. And the decision making, firm decision that I want to make this success, perfection in this life, complete in this life itself, peacefulness inside and perfection in this life. And if we make that decision, Krishna says that you can make progress. If not, we will be wasting our time in spiritual life. We won't make any success in that. So sometimes Uddhareda Alpana Alpanam, Krishna spoke about this. If it was not like that, what would have happened is our attention will go to the body. Our attention will go to the body. And this is the reason one person once asked, how to realize the self? How to realize the self? The sage answered, deserve it and own it, he said. You deserve it and then you own it. Realizing the self is like that. The self is inside. Krishna is inside as the self. And realizing the self is important. And if you are not serious about it, then it will not happen. That's the point Krishna wanted to tell us. He did not say, all other things, for example, Varnashrama Dharmam and other things, what we are talking about is only to support this point. Whether you are in the family life, whether you are a sannyasi, whether you are a brahmachari, it doesn't matter. They are different things in life. That is only temporary. That's not a permanent thing. But we are permanent. These bodily extensions, family life and all that, sannyasa ashram also is temporary. Bodily, householder life is also temporary. Brahmachari life is temporary. They are all temporary things. That's not itself the goal. While within any of these ashram, if you have developed this consciousness, what Krishna has spoken here, that is more important than anything else, more than the external dress. External dress. You may say, oh, my householder life is a problem for me. Because of that, I can't execute. That means you have not come to understand Krishna's words yet. You have not taken Krishna's words seriously. Krishna is saying here, irrespective of which ashram you belong to, irrespective of what situation you are, if this decision is made inside, that's more important. Because if you have made the decision, you will adjust your life to suit this requirement. To suit this requirement. One has to adjust one's own life, whichever way is possible. That is up to the individual to do, which way he wants to do it. How to adjust his life, material life, in those terms. You should not come up with the idea that, oh, I have got to do all these things and then I have to do the special act. No, this decision of the realization of the truth of the self is much more important than any of your other problems of family life and material life. They are not as important as this. So that has to come and go. If you act with detachment in that, not being carried away by all the things what happens in family life and not giving undue importance to it, then this goal will remain strongly inside. And that is the testing point when you will feel how strongly your resolve is, how strong the resolve is. So the second chapter, Krishna begins with these two verses and he is telling to saying to Arjuna that even if a boat is lying in the water, for example, as long as the boat is lying in the water, it's fine. But if the water start entering inside the boat, then that's a dangerous situation, isn't it? Similarly, live in this world, in this material world, unaffected by the material world. If you allow the material world to influence you to that degree, and then there is a problem. That's Krishna's point. Then it will not allow you to take to spiritual life and spiritual realization. So, therefore, Krishna is saying that not to allow things to enter inside. Not to allow the things to enter inside. We have great attachment for various things in this world, isn't it? Sometimes dealing with individuals. Dealing with individuals. Suppose I meet few people every day. Every day you meet for few people. Now, if you meet the people, there's nothing wrong in that. You can talk to them. But if you start thinking about them, then going home and thinking about them again, that means you have allowed them to get inside. That should not happen. That should not happen. See, in material life, we have one way of understanding things, isn't it? Material life, oh, we say to him, oh, I was thinking about you, and you think that it was a good thing. You tell somebody, people like that, isn't it? What do they say? They say, when you go on holiday, people ask this question sometimes, isn't it? Did you miss me? They ask you this question. I've never seen more foolish than that, another question. That if you are missing somebody, that means you are another stupid person. That what is this missing? That you are constantly thinking about other people. That means you have allowed them to get in your own mind and disturb that peace inside. That's what you have done. And sometimes they have not missed anybody, but they'll say, oh, I missed you very much. But this is worse than that, because you have become a liar as well. Earlier, you are at least not a liar, but you didn't think about them anything. That's okay. You didn't think about somebody. Okay, if it is a crime, let it be. Doesn't matter. I've done it for my own protection. I didn't want to think about you. This is what I will say to that person. Because I want to survive in this world. Why should I take your misery inside me and suffer from that? Why should I do that? Similarly, if you think that you can take the misery of the rest of the world within me and start analyzing in that way, I will become depressed. That's what will happen. My resolve, my strength is also limited, isn't it? So intelligence is not to allow things to get in first. First thing to block it. Does not mean that you don't show kindness to others, be rude to others, you be considerate to others. At the same time, don't allow them to control you, any thoughts from outside. Because this peace inside is more important than anything else in spiritual life. If you are not peaceful, Krishna will ask this question at the end. What does that question say? Ashandasya kuta sukham. There is a verse in the second chapter. Ashandasya kuta sukham. One who has no peace inside, what kind of happiness can he have? You remember that verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Ashandasya kuta sukham. So shandi is that thing to keep this mind always peaceful, unaffected by what goes on in the world outside. Ashandasya kuta sukham. So bringing that peace means protecting that all the time. You have made a decision, I want to realize the self. In order to realize the self, I can become peaceful. By realizing the self, I can become peaceful. But if I'm always disturbed, my decision will always be wavering. It will get, because mind is wavering all the time. The goal of the realized soul is to get rid of this mind once for all from inside. When there is no mind inside, there is absolute peace inside. When the mind is full of thoughts all the time, Chitavritti goes on. As I mentioned yesterday, that you can watch and observe people, how distressed and how disturbed they are in their daily life because of all the kind of thoughts that's going through inside. They may not be doing anything wrong, but they couldn't sit in one place. They'll get up and walk out after 5 minutes because mind is somewhere else working. They'll come and sit there. Even in Bhagavatam class, you can see people come and sit for 10-15 minutes. As soon as they sit down, mind has gone somewhere else. They got up straight away. They'll put the head on the floor and then got up and walked out. So you see all these things all the time, isn't it? Why? Mind is not peaceful. And the peace won't happen, Krishna is saying, if you keep on collecting from every garbage from outside and filling it inside, that peace will never be there inside. Ashandasya kutasugam. So Krishna says this, that if you sit without any chitta-vritti, that is, these activities inside, you can yourself see what happens. It will be like as though you have drunk some tonic. You will get the strength from that. See, peacefulness nature in a person, freeing from thoughts and staying without thoughts, gives peace inside. And that gives energy. That gives energy to a person. Now, you should not sit like Arjuna said, fully depressed like this. That's not what he's talking about. Krishna is saying here, if you control your thoughts and not allow the thoughts to from objects outside, persons outside, to affect your mind and keep them away at a distance and live within peace, fully awake, unaffected by any thoughts to come through, you will develop automatically energy inside. You don't have to take glucoside at that time. Glucoside won't help you. This is what will help you at that time. So Krishna's point is that this, you may think why I'm saying all these things around these two verses. See, Bhagavad Gita is also has only one purpose. What is that? The purpose is to shift our attention from body to the soul. So Krishna began like this by pointing out to Arjuna two important things. That this mentality what you have right now has happened to you because you are lacking the proper understanding. And your weakness in the heart. You have allowed this to happen. Krishna says. So, although we talk about Bhagavad Gita, it again goes back to Vedanta philosophy. Vedanta is coming back again. There is only one subject. Sometimes, I to give you an example like this, that there was a young boy, about 4 or 5 years old. He was studying in the first class, the first student, yeah? In the first class in the school. He was not very good in studying. And he used to hate all this rubbish what they were teaching him. He didn't have any liking for it. So, what he did was, he studied different topics they were teaching. You know, in the first standard, they give you small lessons, isn't it? They tell you to write essays on small things like a cow or another animal like chicken or things like that, or about a tree and things like that, isn't it? A few lines you have to write. That is in the first standard, they teach you all these things. So this boy, he didn't know about many things. He had no interest in it. He knew something about a coconut tree. Little few things he knew about a coconut tree. So, first thing when he went for the examination, he thought, if they ask about the coconut tree, I will write about it, he said. If they don't ask about coconut tree, what can I do? They asked about the cow to write, to describe a cow, what you have understood about a cow. So, he didn't know much about the cow to write, what to write about the cow. Only thing he knew that cow gives milk. And cow has got two horns, and he's got four legs, and he's got a tail. He wrote all that. Then what he did was, he said that we tie the cow to the coconut tree. And then he explained his essay, a detail expanded about the coconut tree. See how his mind worked in that way. He tied the cow to the coconut tree. We tie the cow to the coconut tree so the cow doesn't run away. And coconut tree in detail explained as an essay he wrote. And he came home happily. So next time he went for the exam again. This time, unfortunately, it was neither cow nor coconut tree. It was about the chicken, he asked. Now, what do you do? How do you connect chicken and the coconut tree? He only knows about coconut tree. So he spoke about chicken a few things. He says like this. He says, chicken, they wake up in the morning, they give you a wake-up call. Few things what he know about chicken. And then he says, chicken gives the eggs, and some people eat the eggs, all these kind of things. Then he wrote, we don't tie chicken to the coconut tree. Then he started explaining the coconut tree again. You see? So similarly, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ishobanishad, Kathopanishad, it's all talking only about one thing, self-realization. Yeah? But spoken through different routes to come to the same point. So that's why when we are discussing Bhagavad Gita, you should not think, oh, I heard this earlier. But the goal you have not reached, what's the point? The goal is this, that you have to realize the self. That's the goal. To get there, you have to take the help of all this Vedic literature. Upanishads are all talking about the same one truth, Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam, the soul inside. Realizing that soul is the goal. And till you get that point, whatever help you need, you should take from Bhagavad Gita. Whatever help you need, you should take from Srimad Bhagavatam, Ishopanishad, Kathopanishad, whichever Upanishads are helping you. And whatever that helps you should take it without any hesitation. That is the most important thing. So when this Chittavritti stops inside, it is called Mauna Khanamrdabdhi. That means from that silence inside, when the Chittavritti stops inside, a little bit of experience of the soul will come. Because we never experienced this peace inside for a very, very long time in our life, we never experienced the soul. Krishna's all that Jnani says, that when you experience this silence for some time, at some point you will start realizing the soul inside, presence of the soul inside. Because soul is, by nature, it is always very illuminating. Satyam Jnanam Anandam, isn't it? Satyam Jnanam Anandam. That knowledge of the soul will wake up, starts showing its to nature. That so, in order to get our by practicing that satyam, the truth inside, you will start experiencing in due course. We'll start experiencing in due course. Satyam will be revealed to us. The truth is not something going to come from outside. It's already there inside. Every one of us, the soul is present inside. And the presence of the soul means that the knowledge is already there. The knowledge is already there. It doesn't have to come from outside. That's the most important thing. Only what is required is to shift our attention towards that. That's what we have not done. We never given our attention to the soul. And therefore, that realization also hasn't happened to us. So, what is that realization? Realization is this. That this question constantly developing around us, what is my true nature? What is my true nature? And the nature is revealed to us in that peaceful condition inside. That is why in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna talks about the Shanti, he says there that Yajnatavasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Sukhrudam Sarva Bhudanam Yatuamam Shanti Mruchadi. When you realize me, the soul inside, Sukhradam, Sarva Bhudanam, who is a friend of everyone, Yatva Mam, you will experience Shanti, peace inside. Shanti, Mruchati. So, this Shanti is the goal. The Shanti is the goal. If you have reached that state of Shanti, death is not a problem anymore. Because even while leaving the body, you are leaving in peace. You are leaving the body in peace. In that Shanti state. So there is no question of coming back to another material body again. Whereas if you leave the body in all kinds of distress, all kinds of problems inside, the chances that you will have to come back again and continue with material life, another body again. So this is the things one has to think about at this point. And this keeping that attention focused on the soul is an important thing. If you have to keep your attention focused on the soul, sometimes it's very, very difficult. If you allow your mind to engage in so many transactions in this world, it will always create disturbances in our attention towards the soul. And if you ask the question that if it is like that, should I not do any activities in this world? This question will naturally come. Oh, I have got so many responsibilities, so many commitments in this world. Yes, we have responsibilities and commitments as long as you take it upon your head to that level. Otherwise not. That a lot depends on to what extent you want to carry it on your own shoulders. And that is, if you come to terms with this reality, that this material world and material nature has its own way of doing things, and the flow of things will happen in this world in that way, then it should not interfere too much with our own, our individual self-realization. Only because we have taken a lot of things from world outside on our own shoulders that we feel this weight on us. We feel weight on our shoulders. As much as possible, if we keep it to a degree that it does not disturb our own peacefulness within, then it's okay. There's not going to cause any problem. Otherwise, what will happen is the mind will step in. If you increase your transaction with this world, the mind will step in. And mind will start telling you, you know all these things what you read in the Bhagavad Gita, it's all bogus. Don't trust any of those things. And it's not so simple. Spiritual life is not so simple. Actually, spiritual life, Krishna says, is simple. That if we understand these things and if we accept all these things, then it's simple. Otherwise, it's not simple. So Krishna's point is like this, that this is mentioned about that. Yajnavalkya Maharshi once mentioned this in the assembly. Yajnavalkya was saying like this, that one person thought that he heard about the thing called Chindamani. Chindamani is a touchstone. So with this touchstone, if you touch anything, it is in the heavenly planets, immediately it turns into gold. It has got that potency. And like Kalpakavruksham, it's also from the heavenly planets. Kalpakavruksham means you go and sit underneath the tree and ask for anything, it will give it to you. You want a nice feast, it will give you. You want to sleep comfortably, it will give you a nice bedroom. And things like that. So anything can have from the with the help of this Kalpakavruksham. Chindamani is a touchstone with which you can have anything you want from that gold. So somebody thought, I should perform some severe austerities to get Chindamani. So he went and sat there and he started performing his austerity. Immediately Chindamani came and fell on his lap. So when he got Chindamani, he thought, this cannot be, I cannot get it so easily. It should take a lot of time. I am told that a lot of severe austerities are required before you can get Chindamani. So he threw it away. And then what did he do? He went and sat there and performing penances again and again. So at that point, after many, many years of performance, somebody throws some artificial gold onto his, into his lap. So he took that and he thought that I've got Chindamani, and he went home with that. Similarly, in spiritual life also, if we start thinking, I'll be struggling all my life to become spiritual. I'm going to become spiritual one day. Now I'm this body. Now I'm so and so, living in such and such a place. I belong to this world. I am man. I am working here. Or with all these identities, I'm fighting. And at the old age, you know, before I leave this body, I will become spiritual. If you work like that in spiritual life, it won't happen. It's not going to happen. Whatever you have done throughout your life, that is what will be there with you at the end also. So this nature, spiritual nature, is not something to be kept for later date. It has to happen today, right now. We have to start developing this thinking within ourselves today, not later. Once that decision is taken, that I want to go back to Krishna, I want to realize my identity as the spirit soul, mukti, liberation, is necessary for me, then the work should start immediately and try to reach that state of consciousness as quickly as possible and sustain in that level as always. That's also important. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. It's not something to happen at a later date. You see, we have a problem here. Most of us are thinking, I want to become, isn't it? I want to become something. To become something means, just like if you ask a child, say 5 or 7 years old boy, you ask him, what would you want to become? He will give you an answer. Oh, I want to become a pilot, he will say. Sometimes young children will say, he sees the aeroplane and he thinks it must be a great job, captain of that pilot of that aeroplane. It's the highest job in this world because it's on the so high level he is flying. So he has some illusions in his head in that age group. He thinks like that. Or sometimes he may see some movie, and in the movie he finds some fascinating character. He wants to become that. This is the way they will answer, isn't it? The children will answer like that. If you ask a little bit more grown-up boy, say he is in his school, we go and ask the children often. Oh, you've seen this all the time? They go, people ask them, what would you like to do in life? When you see that question, you think the person who is asking, as though he has planned his life so well and he did everything according to the plans. So he's asked this question, what would you like to do? What's he going to do in your future? So he will also answer according to his realization at that time. He will say to you, oh, I want to become a doctor, I want to become an engineer, I want to become a banker or a manager, business manager, whatever that is fascinating him at that time. So here all you can see this thinking, I want to become. Is it? I want to become this, I want to become that, I want to become this, like that. So that thing we have brought into spiritual life also. This is the biggest problem. See, when you bring the same mentality to spiritual life, what happens? I want to become a sannyasi, I want to become a guru, I want to become a yogi, I want to become a GBC, all these things coming. Then you start working in that direction. So, to become something is not spiritual. Let's really understand that clearly. Spiritual, you are already spiritual. You don't have to become anything. You are already a spirit soul. There's nothing to become there. What you are doing is getting rid of all nonsense what you have accumulated in different lifetimes and freeing yourself from all becoming. This becoming itself is a disease. Now, this thing called becoming sannyasi, guru, GBC, yogi, all these kind of things, what we are talking about, it is on a gross level. That also you must remember. These are all on a gross level. In a very subtle level, it works in a different way in spiritual life. How? You want to have followers. You want to have money. You want to have assets, you want respect from the people. These are all in a subtle level working inside. So you can see spiritual level, spiritual consciousness is independent of all these things. It's completely independent. When you have started this intense desire built up inside mukshatvam to free oneself from material identity, to come to the spiritual platform as spirit soul, you've already made your decision. And all the other activities you are thinking only in terms of supporting that decision you have made already, and you are experiencing the peace, and that is the peace that what you need in your life. Not this, all this kind of danda and sannyasam and yogam and all that. That may or may not happen, that's not important. But you can see how in a spiritual life, you have seen people who are chanting 30, 40 years. They are talking in spiritual life about these things. So when you taking sannyas, they ask you, when are you taking sannyas? Or they ask you, when you taking vanaprastham? They think these are all the important things in life. But spiritual realization hasn't happened anything. They are still thinking in terms, what difference it makes if I am still thinking I am this body, whether I am a vanaprastha or I am a sannyasi or I am a householder. I am still the same body I am thinking. So the body mentality has not left me. I have not developed any realization and I am still thinking I am this body. So whether I put saffron or white clothes or I put tie and suit, what does it matter? It's the same, you're calling the same, the bodily identity is coming here. This is why Vedavyasa Maharshi puts it in the Bhagavadam. Yasya alpa buddhi kuna petri dhaduge sodhi kalatra dishu bhauma ijyadi yatirtha buddhi salilena karhichil janeshu abhinyeshu sa eva ghokaraha. That one who has not freed himself from the bodily identity, one who has not come out of this bodily identity, alpa buddhi, he is thinking in terms of this body, kuna petri dhadu, which is made of earth, bile and mucus. So, vatam, pitam and kapam. Tridhadu. So, gunape tridhaduge. So, dhi, and one who is still thinking in terms of his place of birth, and his kalatradishu, wife and family and all kinds of things, bhauma ijedi, that I belong to this country and I belong to this family, I belong to this, and all the identity designations I have acquired. Salilena karhijil janeshu abhityeshu sa eva ghogara. And he is going and bathing in different rivers and thinking that, and he has a tirthabuddhi. Tirthabuddhi means you go and bathe in these rivers thinking that simply bathing in that water will, I will become spiritual. That is bogus. That is foolishness. Sometimes we say like that, somebody said, oh, I had so many times I bathed in Ganga River, he says. But nothing has changed inside. He bathed in Ganga River. So we say to him, that you have you seen that buffalo? He gets bathed every day in the Ganga River. What has changed? What has changed for him? Nothing has changed. Buffalo has bathed, I have also bathed in Ganga River. And I'm saying that I have advanced. Buffalo says, at least not saying that he has advanced. So who is better? So, a tirtha buddhi salilena karhichal, that's what that verse is saying. That tirtha buddhi, when you are bathing in Ganga River, if you are thinking that I am still this body and I am bathing in Ganga River, without any understanding of Ganga River's glory, without realizing who is Ganga, without knowing that it is Krishna's, Krishna's Ganga River is the water that is washed, Krishna's lotus feet that's come, and all the cause how it happened, Bhagiratha's effort to bring Ganga River to this earth. All those things are, create some devotion to Krishna. If it's not creating that devotion, instead identifying with the body, thinking that, that I bathe in Ganga River, that bathing doesn't help. That's what it is. So, yatirtha buddhi salilena karhichil janeshu abhityeshu sa eva ghogara. Krishna's, Vedavyas is saying there, so although these people, they have called abhityas, they are supposed to be a learned people, but generally you can classify them like this as cows and asses. He says, he uses some strong words like that. Cows and asses. Because they are also bathing, there's not much difference. They in the consciousness of a person in that way. So that is the important thing what Krishna was trying to mention this here. That so alpa or the soul is not something you have to bring from outside. Important point. We are thinking spiritual life, I have to get it someday. I have to get one day this thing called alpa, self-realization. I'm working for that. I'm working towards that, we say. But Shastram is telling, Bhagavad is telling us, it's not something you have to get. It's already there. Inside. You don't have to go on working for it, thinking that I'm going to get it one day. It's already with you. This realization is important, Krishna says. Then he says that soul is not something. It's a definition there. Soul is not something which you cannot manufacture and bring it from somewhere else. It's not something ulpadyam. Ulpadyam means manufacture. It's not a product that you can manufacture and bring it to you. It's not vikaryam. Vikaryam means not something which you can transform it and develop into a soul. None of these are soul. Soul's identity is expressed in these ways. That atmanam to ulpadyam na vikaryam na samskaryam. It is not something you can purify something like iron ore. You purify and bring iron from that. Or gold which you purify and then bring pure gold from that, isn't it? So by base metal or something, you purify it and bring a pure metal from that. Soul is not something like that. It is not ulpadyam, na utpadyam, na samskaryam, na vaikaryam. And then he says here, atmanam tu na utpadyam, sa vaikaryam, na samskaryam. Kartrutva bhoktrutva rupam va na kartrutva bhoktrutvam. Also the soul neither have I am the doer or I am the enjoyer of the results. Even that doesn't exist in the soul. Where does all these things exist then? It all exists in the false ego. In us. It all exists in the false ego. In other words, soul, once you start studying soul all the time in this way, by constantly analyzing the difference between the soul and the false ego, you will notice that all your activities in the world are centered around false ego. And the real knowledge is centered around the soul. We want to shift our attention from this false ego, which is centered around the world, to the soul, which is centered around knowledge. Which is centered around the knowledge. So, when you start getting that clarity inside, you start experiencing what is soul. Krishna comes to that later in the second chapter. That is why Krishna goes on and on and on about the soul to us. You may wonder, is it not enough if he tells us one thing? No, it's not. The fact is, it's not enough. It has to be stressed and stressed so that this this ignorance that has affected us so much in depth, which has shifted, made us to be conscious of our false ego and the false body. Relate, false ego means false body. From false ego developed this false body, isn't it? If you remember, in the process, how the soul came to this bodily level, in the deep sleep state, there was nothing. From the deep sleep state, when it came down to the dream state, we attained the mind and the individuality. Individuality and the mind. Individuality is the false ego and the mind. And it came down to Jagrat state, the awakened state, it attained also the added the body to it. And that's what we are sitting here thinking that I am this. So Krishna's point is, in order to come out of this deep-rooted ignorance in us, constantly we should be discussing about the soul, nothing else. By discussing about the soul, what will happen is, this attention will quietly shift slowly from false ego to the real truth inside, which is the soul. And when the soul is experienced, then you experience that happiness, what is known as ananda, true nature of the soul. So this is what is discussed in second chapter basically. All discussions in second chapter is centered around this point. And only by discussion, this understanding will increase inside. And when it increases inside, we will start reflecting on it seriously. Otherwise, we won't even reflect. We will ask the question, how do I reflect? How can you reflect when you have not understood it, what it is? The thing what we are going to reflect on. We'll stop today, tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. 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 Yeah